This week's weather is helping crews assemble for streamside restoration projects in the Rogue Valley. It is the annual Streamside Forest Recovery Week of Lomakotse Restoration Project based in Ashland. Obviously, restoration is always part of the nonprofit's name. This week, there's a particular emphasis on improving land along key streams, especially a stretch of creek in Ashland. Let's hear about the work, who's doing it, and the benefits it confers. Three guests with us. Marco Bay is the executive director of Lomakotse Restoration Project. Good to have you back in the studio, Marco.
Good morning, Jeff.
Belinda Brown is with us as well. She's Lomakotse's Tribal Partnerships Manager. Belinda, good to see you.
Good morning.
And Dave Johnson is with us as well. He is with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's a biologist out of the office in Wairika. Dave, thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you.
So, Marco, send us out for the general stuff about what this week is all about, if you would.
Sure. Well, Lomakotse, we're a nonprofit. We're based here in Ashland. We work throughout Oregon and Northern California. Our mission is to restore ecosystems and the sustainability of communities, cultures, and economies. So the Streamside Forest Recovery Week came about 12 years ago. We were implementing riparian habitat restoration work since our inception, but this is an opportunity to highlight a place-based model across the two states where we work, engaging the community, engaging contractors, local civic organizations, federal agencies. We do this work all year, but this gives an opportunity for the community to get their hands on the land, in the dirt, improving habitat for fish and wildlife, and improving streamside habitat.
Kind of like your annual coming out party, it sounds like.
Yes.
To let people know what you've been up to all year.
Exactly. And we have a particular partnership with the Hellman Elementary that we're working on Ashland Creek Park the last week and the last 3 days with over 300 students. We've had this partnership for many years around the confluence of Ashland and Bear Creeks, where we've done riparian habitat restoration, tree planting, to improve habitat.
That sounds like a handful, 300 students working on restoration work?
Yes, with our riparian management team and our other partners.
All right, let's talk then about the effects we're looking for here. Dave Johnson, I've been watching similar restoration work in and next to streams for years now. So what kinds of benefits do you see to ecosystems and critters when there is streamside restoration done?
Yeah, so I just wanted to give a quick pitch for the Partners Program, which is the program that I work for is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Private Lands Program. And through that program, we partner directly with private landowners or with third-party organizations such as Lomakotse to restore habitat for fish and wildlife on private properties. So we've been partnering with Lomakotse for over 15 years in doing stream restoration work, and those projects have focused on a variety of targets, including fish, riparian habitats, et cetera. So we kind of sort of have a broad scope and are looking at the ecosystem, not just specific species.
Mm-hmm. And then what are some of the things that most need work in the ecosystems as you find them?
So one of the things that, a project that we have been working on with Lomakotse over the last 3 years is the Colstein Valley Beaver Dam Analog Project. And that beaver dam analogs are a restoration technique that is used to restore incised creeks and streams.
You're trying to do what the beavers used to do, essentially.
Exactly. So we're building these structures that are designed to emulate natural beaver dams using all natural materials, and it changes the restores the hydrology and the ecology of the stream to benefit, you know, the critters that live within the system as well as the riparian vegetation.
So, Belinda Brown, it seems like some of what we're doing here is not just emulating the work of beavers, obviously, but obviously also the original human residents of the land as well. I mean, is there a fair amount of traditional ecological knowledge getting rolled into the work that Lomakotse does?
Yes, Jeff. There's traditional ecological knowledge, that place-based knowledge of indigenous Aboriginal people is very important. It's been a part of Lomakotse's work since its inception. TEK is integrated into all the programs and projects that we implement. And so for our people, the Upper Pitt River watershed down in Northern California, we're called Ajumawi Is, and that's the people of the river. And most of the time, our people are directly connected and still connected. Everybody's connected to this water system. It's the veins of Mother Earth. And I believe that that connectivity to our food source, to our water systems, and in this whole region is a big part of what Loma Katsi's work and mission is about, to bring life back into balance. So with the Native American people, indigenous people everywhere, that connection and that recognition of us being that keystone species along with the beaver has been very important. And so the management for time immemorial of our people on this land, of being the first best stewards of the land, is something that we all work together now in partnership with. So this is teamwork making the dream work, from the beaver to the fish to the people who are stewarding.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about Streamside Forest Recovery Week, an annual project of Loma Katsi Restoration Project. Mark Obey, the executive director, is with us. You just heard Belinda Brown, the Loma Katsi Tribal Partnerships Manager. Dave Johnson from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, one of the partners, is with us as well. Questions, comments from you are welcome on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. When you were talking about place-based projects, though, Belinda, I was thinking that some knowledge, I would presume, has been lost over time. People have been removed from their places. They've been killed over the years. Are there some places where people, there just aren't people around who remembered and passed the story on, or got the story passed on to them about how the ecosystems were handled in some places?
Well, I think that's a beautiful marriage today of Western science and traditional ecological knowledge. My grandfather, actually, we're one generation of being from removal from place. However, very much alive. The culture is very much alive with the Karuk tribe, who we partner with the Pitt River tribe, with the regional tribes. This West Coast was the last area of impact. So our elders have memory of putting fire on the ground, of being able to, myself, catch fish with our hands, the Modoc sucker out of the creeks and streams where we grew up. So I believe that knowledge is alive and well, and our partners who are working with us are very much interested and glad to share the Western science. And when we marry the traditional ecological knowledge and the Western science, we're having a very good success rate.
So let's talk about some of the places you've focused on this year and in the past, Marco. But you mentioned Ashland Creek. What's the particular situation there that you're working on with the Hellman Elementary School students?
Well, we've been working on the area of the Ashland Creek Park, which is recently established and managed by the Parks Department of the City of Ashland. And the Rogue River Watershed Council recently removed the Smith-Meyer-Roper Diversion Dam to open up some habitat, cold habitat for anadromous fish and resident fish. So part of what we're doing along that creek is reestablishing the riparian forest, planting a diversity of tree species, native trees and shrubs, riparian plants like black cottonwood, white alder, Oregon ash, and then establishing some of the conifers, incense cedar, ponderosa pine. And then prior to the students coming out last Sunday, a whole community volunteers and community organizations like the Steelheaders came out and did the heavy prep work so the students can come and plant. So that's one of the riparian revegetation efforts we're implementing. And like Dave Johnson with Fish and Wildlife Service mentioned, the Colstein Valley, we've been working in partnership for years with local workforce, reestablishing riparian habitat as well. And that's a big part of this, is this community-based collaborative effort with federal agencies, state agencies, community organizations. It's a replicable model, whether we're in the Sacramento River watershed, where Belinda's tribe is located, to the Mid-Klamath, where we're working in partnership with Fish and Wildlife Service, to Ashland. It's a replicable model of people adopting these unique habitat sites and caring for them, stewarding them over time.
It seems like what you're ending up with in some cases, though, are streamscapes that might vary a bit from the romanticized view that we often have of streamscapes, where, you know, I need to be able to walk down to the water's edge, that sort of thing. I mean, a place that's working well for fish, beavers, invertebrates, all kinds of other critters is not necessarily going to be a place where there's grass right down to the water's edge, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that is correct. And, you know, we are working in areas that, you know, we do still have some areas that are quite pristine and would emulate the exact scenario you described. But we also are working in, you know, urban areas and areas that are experiencing development. So it's all across the board in that respect. So we are dealing with a wide variety of of situations in these restoration projects.
I'm still kind of hung up on the idea of the beaver dam analogs. I mean, are you actually constructing dams of twigs like beavers would?
Yeah. So the way that the beaver dam analogs are actually constructed, they consist of Douglas fir posts that are driven directly into the channel bed, and then on-site willow is woven between the vertical posts. And then lastly, a scour-resistant berm of rock and on-site fine material is placed at the base of the structure. And, there are the primary function of the beaver dam analog is to reduce the velocity of the flow in the creek. And as the flow is reduced, sediment is deposited upstream of the analog, which aggrades or elevates the creek bed over time. And as the creek bed elevates, it raises the elevation of the creek, which subsequently raises the adjacent water table and more consistently activates the adjacent floodplains.
This is also about groundwater recharge then too?
Yes. So if you can recharge the groundwater and raise the water table elevation, you promote a healthy functioning riparian zone because you are providing more water over a longer period of time for that riparian vegetation.
Belinda Brown, how big does the beaver loom in Ajimawi lore? I mean, was the beaver a partner essentially with your people over time?
Yes, the beaver and all the animals which we're speaking for today, the fish and the beaver and the animals that can't speak for themselves, was very much a part of our life. For the fur, obviously, that's what the fur trappers came in for and pretty much desecrated populations of beaver over time. So all the animals are respected as the four-leggeds, the two-leggeds, and again, we go back to that first time immemorial, being the first stewards over the land, watching out for each other, trying to bring back that habitat, because bringing back that habitat brings back the salmon, brings back the fish, and that's our first food source. I think that's really important. The elders will tell us what we eat and gather and grow in the area and the environment that we live in. How we live in the natural rhythms of the earth, sea, and heavens is always going to keep us as a people happier and healthier. And that's for us today. Our elders tell us we're still here. So going back to that last question, we're still here. And the elders that have helped us with cutting-edge riparian plans down in Northern California, with Nikki Del Pizzo, who's been with Loma Katsi for the last 12 years and heads up this riparian program, is very mutually beneficial. So the people and the land all working together to repair these zones that have been mismanaged and sometimes just by ignorance. I grew up on a large ranch in Modoc County where we basically did everything wrong as far as taking care of streams and rivers and water. The people there just didn't know. And so I think with best practice, science, and the traditional ecological knowledge, and us all working together, because this is everybody's issue now, that we can come to zones of agreement and that we can understand that for honoring the ancestors that went before us and working for the generations that are coming after us, that we can sustain and provide ecosystem restoration and also revitalize our cultures and communities.
We're talking about streamside restoration here on the Jefferson Exchange. This is Streamside Forest Recovery Week for Loma Katsi Restoration Project. Belinda Brown is the Tribal Partnerships Manager there. Marco Bay, the Executive Director. Dave Johnson is with us from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Marco, you were talking about the Smith-Meyer-Roper Dam. Where was that exactly on Ashland Creek?
Just below the Ashland Creek Park.
Okay, so it was right there.
Right in the residential area. Mm-hmm. And that was a project of the Rogue River Watershed Council. Exciting project, and we came in as a partner after to do the revegetation following the removal. That's how we partner.
Okay. You know,
there's a lot of great aquatic habitat work happening in the Rogue Basin, great organizations like the Freshwater Trust, the Rogue Basin Partnership, and we're happy to be part of that restoration community, bringing our model to the table. A lot of the work we do is in the uplands. Mm-hmm. And Dave mentioned earlier the beaver dam analogs, those Douglas fir posts actually came out of the Ashland Watershed.
I was going to ask
so
if
we're taking upland restoration products, mm-hmm. the byproducts of restoration, and using them in aquatic work in partnership with the Forest Service. We had a permit to remove those small poles. So, from forest to fish, from the ridgetops to the valley bottoms, a lot of this effort's happening.
All right. So you can't just think about it in one place. It's here and it's there all together.
Right.
So, Dave Johnson, I'm sure there are some people who are going to say, well, wait a minute. So you guys took out a human-built dam, to, and then you're putting these other dams in that are beaver dam analogs, not in the same place, granted. But right. So the question is going to come from some people, like, why remove all these older human dams?
Well, to be honest, I'm not really involved in these human dam removal projects, so mm-hmm. I'm probably not really the person to ask that question. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think in general, the human dams are removed to open up more habitat for fish because they typically act as barriers to fish passage. Not all of them, but some of them do. So removing the human dams actually opens up, you know, depending, each dam is specific, obviously, but potentially miles of habitat upstream from those dams.
Okay, grab your headphones in front of you because I want to take a phone call here. We have Ryan and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking with Mark O'Bay, Dave Johnson, and Belinda Brown.
Well, I thank you, Jeffrey. I am so excited about this conversation. I have to admit, I was taking a shower this morning. My one of my biggest dilemmas is the artificial split that existed for a long time between traditional ecological knowledge and so-called modern science. And certainly the science side has gotten a lot better at ecosystem management and biodiversity and those kinds of conversations. And clearly landscape management measured in thousands of years is a critical mm-hmm. Piece of the puzzle. My issue or my, you know, query is, how do we foster this? How do we support this, you know, this work so that that blend, this sort of beautiful, perfect blend, can happen more?
Okay. Thanks for the question, Ryan. Appreciate that. Marco, take that, please.
I think coming from the restoration practitioner side, utilizing Western science and then our close partnerships with indigenous communities, we're seeing that marriage come to fruition through active projects on the ground. One example is in the Ajumoe Atsage project, we implemented a riparian restoration planting strategy. We involved the elders from that community to give input. We brought geomorphologists to the table, and we developed a riparian restoration strategy that incorporated TEK and Western science from the people of place-based knowledge right there, who were given input on actually what will thrive and survive our planting. And the Western science from the background of the reference conditions of that watershed. So I think those examples are beginning to pop up in more and more places. And then there's more published science giving the TEK a voice at the table with PhDs in the field who are indigenous practitioners and scientists. So bringing that to the table from the grassroots to the science, we're seeing that in more places.
Just a couple seconds left. For people who didn't get a chance to come out for Streamside Forest Recovery Week, if they're interested in helping with projects like this, where do they go?
They can check out Lomakatsi's website. There's other organizations they can volunteer for and other community-based watershed organizations. And there'll be more projects happening throughout the week and throughout the fall.
Okay. All kinds of stuff going on at Lomakatsi Restoration Project. This is Streamside Forest Recovery Week. Mark O'Bay is the executive director at Lomakatsi. Belinda Brown, the tribal partnerships manager. Dave Johnson joins us from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He's a biologist based in Wairika. Thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so
much. Good to have you here.